And now we explore the compulsive energy that built a nation. Joshua Kendall puts many American icons on the psychologist's couch in his new book, America's Obsessives. It's a fascinating look at the arc of American history through the lens of compulsive behavior. Kendall shows how some of our nation's greatest achievements, from the Declaration of Independence to the invention of the iPhone, have roots in the disappointments and frustrations of early childhood. Starting with the obsessive natures of some Silicon Valley titans, including Steve Jobs, Kendall moves on to profile seven iconic figures such as Founding Father Thomas Jefferson, Melville Dewey, H.J. Hines, Ted Williams, and Estee Lauder. Author and journalist Joshua Kendall, it's a great pleasure to have you here on the program. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to be on with you, Joe.
Do you think of yourself as an obsessive?
I like to say that I'm obsessed with the obsessed.
Okay.
As a biographer, my job is to get inside my subject's head. And for someone like Melville Dewey, Dewey invents the Dewey Decimal System in the 19th century. And that was not just a way of organizing library books. It was a way of organizing all information. Dewey was kind of an IT geek of the 19th century, the 19th century's Sergey Brin. Anyhow, he loves 10, and he liked to sleep 10 hours a night, and so he's just an intriguing figure, and it's just really fun to bring someone like that to life.
So when you think of these figures, I'm interested of how you identified them, what criteria you used, and what it was, the specific ideas and the specific nature that they had that puts them into that category of compulsive and obsessive?
Yes. I'm using the framework of mainstream psychiatry. So I whipped out psychiatry's diagnostic manual, the DSM, and this is psychiatry's Bible. And the DSM has something called obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. And these are basically control freaks, and they list 8 symptoms. And preoccupation with details, rules, order, lists, organization or schedules, perfectionism, excess devotion to work, inflexibility. Now, that's obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, and that's not the same thing as OCD. People will say, oh, I have a touch of OCD, and I'm just going to clean my kitchen. People with OCD can't start Apple. They're often impaired. They might check the burner 1,000 times. They're afraid to leave the house. But people with the personality disorder are concerned about some of the same things like cleanliness and checking. But they can turn that into a business. Steve Jobs, whom I profiled at the beginning of the book, used to wear white gloves to check for dust in the Apple factory, and if the factory wasn't perfectly spick and span, he would bark at his assistants to clean it up right away. And they're very inflexible, and whereas those with OCD seek psychiatric treatment, those with the personality disorder often drive other people to seek psychiatric treatment, like their wives or their employees or their children. So they're kind of hard-driving and very inflexible. And it's a disorder because they have a hard time relating to other people. They have a hard time connecting. But what I want to drive home is that even though interpersonally they're challenged, that these folks often have a leg up in the workplace. Their inflexibility and their perfectionism can be just what they need to start a company or to be a great baseball player like Ted Williams or to be a great president like Thomas Jefferson.
So they channel it for good.
Yes.
And I'm curious as to, obviously you don't have to have this particular personality to be successful, but for these individuals it worked. And yes. what I found fascinating in the book is, because you use the word energy in the title, but what I found fascinating is how it works with other people. I mean, it's almost what they do drives them, but then there's also the effect on those around them.
Yes. So if they can find something a way to channel their energy. Estee Lauder couldn't stop touching other people's faces. It goes back to childhood. She was putting makeup on her mother as a little girl. And as I joke in the book, if she didn't have her business as an alibi, she might have been arrested for assault with deadly face powder. But if she, I mean, she would go up to strangers and put makeup on them. I spoke to her granddaughter, and she went with her granddaughter to a PTA conference, and the teacher got a makeover. But if they can find a way to channel it, they do fine. But as you were alluding to, they can often drive other family members a bit crazy with their inflexibility and with their lack of emotional connection. The most intriguing and colorful example, and it's almost unbelievable, but I did document it, was that Charles Lindbergh, the aviator, had three German mistresses. So he had Anne Lindbergh, who was a famous writer in Connecticut, and he raised several children with her. And he had three German mistresses with whom he raised seven children, and he also had other girlfriends. So his life was, and it's, you know, again, he's an order freak, but his life is totally out of control. And I found this strange link between obsessionality and sexual compulsivity. A bunch of my obsessives had a lot of girlfriends. Another example was Melville Dewey of the Dewey Decimal System. He couldn't keep his hands off the librarian, and around 1900, he had sexual harassment problems, which were very similar to the ones that Bob Filner is having out in San Diego. And if you want any confirmation between the link between obsessionality and sexual compulsivity, all you have to do is look at New York City politics, and you see a couple of them.
Right.
So I want to say that this is not the only way to be successful, but this is a standard pathway to success. And what I'm trying to do is inject the element of the irrational. Malcolm Gladwell, in his thoughtful book Outliers, says that if you give Bill Gates 10,000 hours on the computer as a high school student, you might end up with Microsoft a decade later. And I'm arguing that repetition is often important for success, but so is that little maniacal overdrive, that people who are a little out of control and just can't stop touching faces, or in Steve Jobs' case, he couldn't stop designing insanely great products. When he was on his deathbed, he had an oxygen mask on, and he rips off the oxygen mask and yells at his doctors that he hates the design. I mean, designing great products was more important to him than life itself. But somehow this maniacal overdrive is consistent with success.
And the success that you mentioned, many examples of people who take it one step further. I mean, looking at Anthony Weiner and so forth, where there are aspects of their personality that brought these people down. For all practical purposes, the people that you look at in the book were successful and had a very successful career and can still be labeled successful without having the downfall.
Yes. In most cases, they were successful because they channeled it.
Right.
But these folks are always kind of close to the edge, and every once in a while they slip over. Henry Heinz, who turned ketchup into our national sauce around 1900, and like Steve Jobs, he was a cleanliness nut. His factory was a must-see tourist destination in Pittsburgh for half a century, and he prided himself on the clear bottles in which his pickles appeared. He was close to a nervous breakdown on several occasions, and he had to retire at the age of 50. And for the last 20 years of his life, his children would insist that he chill out every summer at a German sanatorium. And that was probably as much for Heinz's health as for his family's, because he was just tough to be around. But these folks can really stress themselves out by working all the time. But at the same time, working all the time sometimes is kind of a therapy. They don't like to look within. They don't like to reflect. When Thomas Jefferson was writing the Declaration of Independence, he starts a massive weather chart, and he's going to start taking the weather three or four times a day in July of 1776. As it was said of Estee Lauder, she relaxes by doing something else hard. These folks didn't like to relax, and sometimes they function very well doing a zillion different things, but every once in a while they can burn themselves out.
And when you talk about therapy for this their work was what got them through, right? They weren't,
exactly.
As you say, they weren't sitting down on a couch talking about what they did.
No, they felt a lot of anxiety, and somehow they channeled their anxiety into their work. And they often had tough childhoods. Ted Williams grew up in San Diego, and neither of his parents was around much. His mother was a Salvation Army nut that was trying to save the town's drunks and prostitutes, and one of those drunks was his father. And as a little boy, he kind of bonded with his bat, the way Linus in Peanuts bonds with his blanket, and he's practicing his swing constantly. And that's a way to sort of, he focused on something that helped him get out of that chaotic situation. In contrast, Ted Williams has a brother that's 10 years younger, and the brother becomes a juvenile delinquent. The brother is also a foot shorter, and the brother doesn't have athletic ability,
right.
But Ted Williams was able to find something that really anchored him and gave him a life.
The book is fascinating. It's called America's Obsessives, The Compulsive Energy That Built a Nation. It is published by Grand Central. Joshua Kendall, thank you very much for being with us. I do appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, Joe.
Thanks so much. Again, the title of the book, America's Obsessives. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.